Empower Radio presents Welcome to Blissville with the Bliss Lady, Terry Williams. Get ready to connect with inspiring, motivating, enlightening, and joyful guests who are following their bliss. Now, here's your host, Terry Williams.
Hey, welcome to Blissville, gang. Today, we're going to talk about those voices in our head that kind of keep us stuck. You know, the ones that keep you doubting your abilities to succeed and really move forward in life. My guest, Valerie Young, has made it her mission to wake people up. She calls those doubts the imposter syndrome. And I think we all feel that every now and then in our lives. I know I did. She has created a step-by-step plan to help us all move closer to living our dreams with joy and, well, bliss. So welcome to Blissville, Valerie.
Thank you very much, Terry. I'm thrilled to be here.
You know, what a great title. The name of the book is The Secret Thoughts of Successful Women, Why Capable People Suffer from the Imposter Syndrome and How to Thrive in Spite of It. How did you come to approach this subject and really share it?
Well, you know, I was actually, I describe myself, Terry, as a recovering imposter. And I first found out there was a name for these feelings when I was in graduate school. I was in my mid-20s, I guess. I was in a doctoral program. I was quite certain that everyone else was smarter than me and much more deserving to be there, and that I, you know, somehow fooled them into accepting me. And, you know, that this big fear that I was going to be found out. And then somebody brought in a paper called The Imposter Phenomenon Amongst High-Achieving Women by the two psychologists who actually coined the term, Dr. Pauline Clance and Dr. Suzanne Imes. And she started, you know, describing these findings that these accomplished, you know, high-achieving women felt like they were fooling people and that they really weren't as bright and capable as everybody thought they were. Mm-hmm. And I remember sitting there just nodding my head like a little bobblehead dog going, oh, my God, that's me. And then I looked around the room and all the other students were nodding their head. And like it was just unbelievable to me because these were my role models. So I, you know, since did some research, started doing workshops on the subject and, you know, kind of fast forward 25 years later, wrote a book with Random House.
Well, and it's really not about self-esteem per se and has little to do with your self-confidence. It has a lot more to do with how you project yourself in the world, right?
Well, no, I think it has a lot to do with self-confidence. It you know, what people confuse it with is self-esteem, and I don't think it's necessarily a self-esteem issue, mm-hmm. but there's certainly, you know, some confidence pieces involved there, you know, and how you perceive yourself relative to competence. But there's kind of two kinds of people who feel like imposters, Terry. One, continue to excel and get incredible successes. So they, you know, they win literally, you know, the Oscar, you know, mm-hmm. best, you know, the best actor or actress of all time for that year. They go on to, you know, be best-selling authors, to be CEOs of corporations, to become, you know, Canadian Mounted Police and so on. Then there's another category of people who struggle with, really, it is a self-confidence issue, I think, and feel like imposters, and they never start. You know, mm-hmm. they go after their goals. They don't start their business. They don't sit down and write their novel because they are afraid, you know, they just don't have the confidence. And if they do, they think somebody's going to find out. They really don't know what they're doing.
And where does it come from?
Well, it comes from a lot of different places. You know, I kind of joke in my book, you know, half joke, but I talk about 10 perfectly good reasons why you might feel like a fraud. And the first one is, mm-hmm. raised by a human, which of course we all were. So it could have been messages you got growing up. You know, if you were the kid who had 4 A's and 1 B and your family's only response was, what's that B doing there?
Mm-hmm.
Had a really strong message around perfectionism.
I loved that chapter in your book because, you know, I come from the place where I'm the youngest of six, and I had to compete for a lot. And although my parents didn't put a huge amount of stress on education, but I really had to compete for a lot if I wanted to stand up to who they were.
Right, right. Or just stand out, you know, because for kids, approval is like oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
sharing that in a big family, you know, you could have the opposite experience. You know, you're the kid who came home with five A's, and your parents are so busy or tired that they're like, okay, you know, whatever.
Right.
Fact that you're going to do well. And so you're going to keep, you know, your whole adult life, you're going to try to get your parents to notice you and, you know, notice me, look at me, I'm smart too. But it could also be, you know, if you're in a creative field, you know, there's a reason why there's so many actors and actresses. And, you know, Maya Angelou says, I've written 11 books. And every time I write another one, I think, uh-oh, they're going to find out I pulled another one over on them. You know, Mike Myers says he's always waiting for the no-talent police to show up at his door. I mean, those are people who are being judged by subjective standards, by people whose job title is critic. If you're working or studying or living in another country, that can be, you know, that can provoke imposter feelings. If you're, I mean, there's a reason why when I speak at corporations, Terry, it's almost always to women in science, technology, or engineering. Those are women who are in very, very male-dominated fields. So when there's not a lot of people who look like you, it could be based on gender, it could be based on race, you're also more vulnerable to these feelings because you, you know, you feel that pressure to kind of represent your entire group.
One of the other topics that you talked about in that you know, same chapter was that you work alone. And
yeah,
I
people
found
who work
that
alone,
with me.
You know, you're kind of setting your own internal bar, and we tend to set it unsustainably high. You know, no mere mortal could ever measure up. You know, it's not like we're getting a performance evaluation at the end of the, you know, at the end of the year. So for people, particularly who are kind of solo entrepreneurs or they're in some kind of a solo practice, yeah, they're definitely much more susceptible.
Yeah, that was definitely me. I mean, there was so much that I could relate to in this. I loved how you just took, you know, took a little bit of everything of how people are feeling so that we could all relate to it. And I also love, Valerie, how you share your own personal experiences throughout the book.
Yeah, I really wanted to make it, Terry. So first of all, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome.
It's the hardest thing I ever did writing that book. But I was very aware going in that, you know, even though I do cite lots of research, I really tried to write the Oprah version, if you will. You know, I wanted it to be very readable and very accessible and very non-academic.
And as you were writing it, you know, a kind of personal question, did you feel some of those own voices coming up to you? You know, like, this is your first book, right?
This is my first book with a major publishing house. Yeah. I got a six-figure advance. So I did feel, you know, quite a bit of pressure to write a really good book because they were paying me a lot.
To really deliver the guts. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I didn't feel it so much writing the book. What I, when I felt it was before I wrote the book, when my agent and I were, you know, going around New York and interviewing over 2 days with all the big major publishing houses. And it was really kind of one phone call. Only one of those I ended up doing the interview over the phone because they were the publisher and the editor were going to be on vacation when I was going to be in New York. And that's the one that I felt really good on the phone. And then after the interview, I started second-guessing myself and, you know, going, oh, my God, why did I say this and why didn't I say that? And, you know, and the irony was not lost on me that, you know, here I was pitching this idea of writing a book on the imposter syndrome and I was, you know, doing this total number on myself. But see, and I even put that in the book because I want people to know that it may not 100% go away. And so I don't want people to read the book and go, oh, no, I still feel this way and feel discouraged. To me, it's more about, even though I had that moment, you know, and it probably lasted about 24 hours, but, you know, you're able to talk yourself down faster. And to me, that's the goal.
Well, it really speaks to women. You know, your whole work to me speaks to women. Although it applies to everybody in life, this is where I found that I most connected with. And, you know, when I started reading the book, I'm one of these people that kind of likes to open up to a chapter and see what hits me. And of course, the first chapter that I opened up to was Success and the Female Drive to Care and Connect. You have a great quote in there by Eleanor Roosevelt. I'm so glad I never feel important. It does complicate life. Like, to me, that's like the essence of your book. It's saying that we don't feel important. And then you have all these wonderful tools to help us really connect with who we are and why we're here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in that particular chapter, Terry, it was two chapters I wrote about success because I really wanted the reader to understand that success is complicated, and I think it's more complicated for women or if you're working class. I mean, for different reasons, success can be complicated, and nobody ever tells us that.
Mm-hmm.
I find that sometimes what feels like, you know, imposter feelings or fear is really something else going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, if you have this chance to relocate and take this big promotion on the other side of the country or the other side of the world, you might be going, oh my God, you know, can I really do it? And
mm-hmm.
yet down, what may be troubling you more is suddenly you're going to be away from your family and your mother's getting older, or
mm-hmm.
not going to be a lot of people who look like you, you know. I mean, the higher you go in an organization, the more male and pale it's going to be. So it
right.
might be anxiety about feeling isolated. Or what about the kids? You know, and women have, and I'm always talking generalizations, right, when we talk about gender differences, because there are certainly men who fall into this category, but women as a group have a more layered definition of success.
Right.
There's a reason why women start smaller businesses, and it's not just because they're taking care of families, it's that they're not as motivated by money, power, and status, and for better
mm-hmm.
or worse, men have been saddled with that as a definition. So they're more looking for, you know, joy and meaning and things like that. So it gets very hard to sort out, Terry, when you have this chance to really step it up and really kind of play big, to really get clear, am I afraid because I don't think I can do it? Or is it that deep down, I don't think I want it? I don't want to work 80 hours a week, or I don't want to relocate, or I don't want to hire 20 employees and run this complex organization.
Mm-hmm. Again, we're talking with Valerie Young. You can find all of Valerie's information on our website. Valerie also does a great program called Changing Course, which we'll get to in just a second. But Valerie, what are some of the questions that we can ask ourselves? You know, you mentioned, am I doing this for, you know, various reasons? What are some of the other questions that we can use to identify that reluctance and really say yes to moving forward?
Well, you know, I think, so for example, if there's other people involved, now let me, when I say other people, what I'm talking about too is that women tend to be very other-oriented, meaning
mm-hmm.
other people's needs and approval and opinions, but also just that connection does really matter to us, so that, you know, you might have two young girls, for example, and one gets a B and one gets an A, and the little girl with the A might lie to her friend and say she got a B because you don't want it's like our success might make someone else feel badly.
Right.
So I think some of what we experience as modesty as women, in fact, is trying to protect other people's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk too much about being, you know, too successful. So if you're in that situation and you're not sure, what am I really afraid of, take out one of the elements. In other words, say, if I knew that this other person was going to be okay, or if I knew that when I relocated the move to the new place that I was going to be really happy there, would I still doubt my competence?
Mm-hmm.
You know, or, you know, if I had all the confidence in the world, would I still want to keep my business small? You know, maybe you're more of what I call a lifestyle entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
Now, try to take out one of the elements, because it's usually not just one or the other, but often it's more one or the other that's holding you back.
Right. Well, and what about fear? You talk about that in the book, too. You know, you really address, is it fear of success or something else? That's the title of one of the chapters. I mean, what can we do to recognize that it's fear that's holding us back?
Well, I think, you know, once you've gotten clear on what success means to you, you know, that would be kind of step one. You know, how am I defining success, and how will I know
mm-hmm.
when I'm successful, and success on your own terms, you know, that then it's a matter of saying, okay, what, you know, what am I really afraid of? If I'm achieving at a level that I'm comfortable with, but I'm still have these imposter feelings, then, you know, what is going on? And we should probably just kind of define the imposter syndrome for people, which is, you know, essentially that belief that regardless of external evidence of our abilities, so it could be degrees or prior experience or, you know, awards. I mean, evidence comes in many different ways, you know, just having a successful business. That deep down, we don't internalize those things. In other words, we go, well, sure, I'm successful, but I can explain all that. So we're very dismissive of our success. And we say, well, I just was lucky or timing or sure, I got the job, but it's because somebody helped me. I had connections. Or I think women particularly are likely to say, well, it's just because they like me. That's why I got great evaluations when I did mm-hmm. that seminar.
Instead of just saying, thanks, I've earned it, you know, or I deserve it.
Right. Or recognizing that, you know, sometimes luck does play a role. Sometimes timing does play a role, mm-hmm. Connections and charm. But it's what you do with it that counts. Those are all legitimate aspects of success. But, you know, if you ask any salesperson, they're going to tell you that, you know, timing is everything. You know, or if you're self-employed, following up with somebody that you met at an event, you know, that's all about timing. So, you know, a lot of people have connections. The example I use in the yearbook is in my book is to look through any high school or college yearbook, and you'll find people who had every opportunity. They had amazing connections, but mm-hmm. they still, you know, sabotage their own success or what have you. So it's what you do with connections. It's what you do. And I should say personality, what women especially need to understand is that having a great personality is a skill set. And I
Absolutely.
Used to be in a 200 company, and I would be, you know, on the other side of the desk hiring people. And all things being equal, or even one person having less kind of quote-unquote qualifications on paper, mm-hmm. if they had a more, you know, kind of pleasant personality, because, you know, when you think about it, you're going to be working with this person 5 days a week. You're also looking for how do they kind of fit into the department and the organization. So, you know, personality really does count because it also speaks to kind of emotional intelligence, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I worked within staffing myself and had the opportunity to do some recruiting and interviewing. And you're absolutely right. If there was a candidate that had an outstanding personality, you know, that was kind of bright, and not bright as in intelligent, but, you know, bright as in a bright light and charming and seemed to be very authentic in the way they presented that personality, I would give them a chance over the rest.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need to recognize that and not go, oh, it's just because they like me. You know, that really is a skill. But also, you wouldn't take a chance on them if there wasn't something behind that.
Absolutely.
People who can kind of talk a good game and, you know, then they get in and you're like, oh, my God.
You know? Right. Oh, yeah. There are definitely people in there that can talk a good game. And, well, gosh, you know, in your field, that's probably a whole nother show, but, you know, how do you tune in to which ones are not authentic, you know, and not really presenting this, but are exactly the opposite? You know, they bring on this essence of a great personality and a shining light, and you really got to do the work to get underneath it and see who they are.
Yeah. And it probably is a whole other topic, but that's probably where, you know, things like, you know, the references come into play. And I'm sure in big organizations, they have, you know, some personality tests and some things that people can do. But those things do happen. I mean, I've been involved in, you know, hiring people who turned out to be, you know, pathological and, you know, ripped the company off. And
right.
Yeah, another whole topic.
Definitely another topic. Well, since we're talking about employment and moving forward in life, I really want to talk briefly about changing course and the work that you do there. One of the things that really grabbed me was your focus on finding work that you love. And today, so many people are struggling with employment and where they see the future as far as our economy goes. And let's talk a little bit about the work that you do at Changing Course.
Sure. Yeah. Well, changingcourse.com is a website, a business that I started in 1995 and went online in 1998. So in internet terms, I'm very old. so I've had, you know, the Changing Course newsletter for going on 17 years now. And it's really all about helping people figure out how to make a living or generate income doing something that you enjoy, but without a job. So outside of the job box, income generating solutions, if you will. And I'm not talking about, kind of these business opportunities, work from home, stuffing envelopes. It's to figure out, what do I love to do? What do I want my life to look like? Do I want to work at home, outside of the home, with other people, alone? Do I want to travel? Those kinds of questions. And then come up with some ways based on things you like to do that you can generate income. It could be an extra $200 a month to, your full-time living over time, something you grow into over time.
And you have some great workshops that you provide, hands-on workshops.
Yes. For a long time, and I might go back to doing this at some point, I was doing very large events of, anywhere from 100 to 150 people. It's called Work at What You Love.
Mm-hmm.
Come together from all over the country and even internationally to really zero in on what do I love to do. And then I teach them this process for figuring out how do you monetize those, and how do you continually be looking, kind of scanning the world for income generating opportunities. Because it's also about thinking in terms of multiple profit centers.
Mm-hmm.
People get really fixated on, oh my God, I'm making $50,000 or $75,000 or $100,000. If I leave my job, I've got to come up with this one big idea that's going to replace my income. And number one, unless you have a lot of money stashed away, it's very hard to transition, from one day to another. That's why I call the website changingcourse.com and not jumpoffacliff.com.
Right.
Process moving from one world to another world. But it's really a lot easier to come up with three profit centers that each make $25,000 a year than it is to come up with that one big $75,000 idea.
Right. Well, and there's not a lot of security like there used to be. I mean, my father, he was with the company for 35 years. He's been gone now for 16 years. And, when he left the company that he worked for, he was set. He had insurance for the rest of his life, and he had Social Security, and he had a pension and all of that other stuff. And we don't necessarily have that security anymore. There's not companies that are going to really take care of us like that. It's up to us to find those multiple streams of income and really take care of ourselves.
Yeah, and I think people are realizing more and more whether they're whether they're going to try to just do something on the side, to kind of supplement their earnings, or there's a lot of people, retirement or pre-retirement where they got laid off. Like you said, there really is not that security. And so, they're saying, gee, I'm 59, I got laid off. Do I really, want to go back and try to get another job, or do I want to try to generate my own income?
Mm-hmm. I love it. I think it's great. Listeners, I encourage you to really visit our page and visit Valerie's work and grab the book, The Secret Thoughts of Successful Women. It does not necessarily apply to just women. We all feel it. We all feel that those times in our lives when we are not necessarily good enough or, not doing the right things. And you do a workshop with the Secret Thoughts of Successful Women as well?
Yeah, I do that. Well, mostly I'm speaking at either, colleges or universities like, Harvard or Stanford or University of Michigan, all over the country, or speaking at corporations like Boeing or Chrysler or IBM or Ernst & Young. I don't do public seminars anymore, but I am doing, teleclasses. So if people go to impostorsyndrome.com, which is my other website, and just sign up to get those wise words of the week when I do another teleclass, that way I can, pull in people from all over the country and you don't have to actually travel to a seminar.
Excellent. Well, time goes by so fast. We're just about ready to close. I love to have my guests give one or two thoughts for the day, something positive that our listeners can take with them. What would be your thought for the day?
Well, I would say that my thought for the day, Terry, is to really take a look at your internal competence rule book, and to realize that with very few exceptions, you know enough right now, you're good enough right now to do that thing you want to do, and that life is too short to, you know, to hold back because of unnecessary fear. So just go for it.
That's awesome. That was one of my quotes today. You know, what are you afraid of? Just face it and go for it. I love that. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm looking forward to finishing the book. I've got two chapters left to go, and I really appreciate your work and your efforts. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Terry.